we are starting chapter 20 of Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, called The First Task. Harry got up on Sunday morning and dressed so inattentively that it was a while before he realized he was trying to put his hat over his foot instead of his sock. When he'd finally got all his clothes on the right parts of his body, he'd hurried off to find Hermione, locating her at the Gryffindor table in the Great Hall, where she was eating breakfast with Ginny. Feeling too queasy to eat, Harry waited until Hermione had swallowed her last spoonful of porridge.
It's just oatmeal is what they mean, yeah. That's what porridge is to them.
Porridge. And then dragged her out onto the ground. There, he told her all about the dragons and everything Sirius had said, while they took another long walk around the lake. Alarmed as she was by Sirius's warnings about Karkaroff, Hermione still thought that the dragons were the more pressing issue. Mm-hmm. "Let's just try to keep you alive until Tuesday evening," she said desperately, "and then we can worry about Karkaroff." They walked three times around the lake, trying all the way to think of a simple spell that would subdue a dragon. Nothing whatsoever occurred to them, so they retired to the library instead. Here, Harry pulled down every book he could find on dragons. You know, that's not suspicious at all.
Well, the other thing is, didn't they do a stunning spell that Harry saw Charlie do to the dragon?
Yeah, but it was with, like, 10 wizards at once doing a stunning spell. Remember, he said you couldn't do one wizard couldn't.
I don't remember that. Okay, gotcha. Good to know.
And both of them set to work searching through the large pile. Talon clipping by charms, treating scale rot. This is no good. This is not for nutters like Hagrid who want to keep them healthy. Dragons are extremely difficult to slay owing to the ancient magic that imbues their thick hides, which none but the most powerful spells can penetrate. But Sirius said a simple one would do. "Let's try some simple spell books, then," said Harry, throwing aside men who love dragons too much. He returned to the table with a pile of spell books and set them down and began flipping through each in turn, Hermione whispering nonstop at his elbow. "There are switching spells. What's the point of switching it? Unless you swapped its fangs for wine gums or something that would make it less dangerous. Trouble is, like that book said, there's not much that's going to get through a dragon's hide. I'd say transfigure it, but something that big. You really haven't gotten a hope. I doubt even Professor McGonagall. Unless you're supposed to put the spell on yourself. Maybe give yourself extra powers. But they're not simple spells. I mean, we haven't done any of those in class. And I know about them because I've been doing owl practice papers." "Hermione," said Harry through gritted teeth. "Will you shut up for a bit, please? I'm trying to concentrate." But all that happened when Hermione fell silent was that Harry's brain filled with a sort of blank buzzing, which didn't seem to allow any room for concentration. Mm-hmm. He stared hopelessly down at the index of basic hexes for the busy and vexed. Instant scalping. But dragons had no hair. Pepper breath. That would probably increase the dragon's firepower. Horn taunt. That was just what he needed to give an extra weapon. "Oh no, he's back again. Why can't he read on his stupid ship?" said Hermione irritably as Victor Crumb slouched in, cast a surly look over the pair of them, and settled himself into a distant corner with a pile of books. "Come on, Harry, we'll go back to the common room. His fan club will be here in a moment, twittering away." And sure enough, as they left, a gang of girls tiptoed around them, one of them wearing a Bulgarian scarf tied around her waist. I mean that girl did it with Victor.
No, it means she wants to.
Oh, I see. Do you think Victor got any?
No, he's too brooding.
That's why they like him.
Yeah.
Maybe after the competition he'll, I don't know. Harry barely slept that night. When he woke on Monday morning, he seriously considered for the first time just running away from Hogwarts. As he looked around the Great Hall at breakfast time, he thought about what leaving the castle would mean, and he knew he couldn't do it. It was the only place he'd ever been happy. Well, he supposed he must have been happy with his parents, too, but he couldn't remember that. Somehow, the knowledge that he'd rather be here and facing a dragon than back on Privet Drive with Dudley was good to know. It made him feel slightly calmer. He finished his bacon with difficulty. His throat wasn't working too well. And as he and Hermione got up, he saw Cedric Diggory leaving the Hufflepuff table. Cedric still didn't know about the dragons, the only champion who didn't. if Harry was right in thinking that Maxime and Karkaroff would have told Fleur and Crumb. "Hermione, I'll see you in the greenhouses," Harry said, coming to his decision as he watched Cedric leave the hall. "Go on, I'll catch up." "Harry, you'll be late. Your bell's about to ring. I'll catch up with you, okay?" By the time Harry had reached the bottom of the marble staircase, Cedric was at the top. He was with a load of 60-year friends. Harry didn't want to talk to Cedric in front of them. They were among those who had been quoting Rita Skeeter's article at him every time he went near them. He followed Cedric at a distance, and he saw that he was heading towards the charm corridor. This gave Harry an idea. Pausing at a distance from them, he pulled out his wand, took careful aim. "Defendio." Cedric's bag split. "It's not nice." He could have just gone up. "Cedric, can I talk to you for a second?"
"Just read."
Parchment, quills, and books spilled out of it onto the floor. Several bottles of ink smashed. "Don't bother," Cedric said in an exasperated voice as his friends bent down to help him. "Tell Flitwick I'm coming. Go on." This is exactly what Harry was hoping for. What, no, his friends not to help him? He slipped his wand back into his robes, waited until Cedric's friends had disappeared into their classroom, and hurried up into the corridor, which was now empty of everyone except himself and Cedric. "Hi," said Cedric, picking up a copy of A Guide to Advanced Transfiguration that was now splattered with ink. "My bag just split, brand new and all. See that? So much less." "Cedric," said Harry, "the first task is dragons." "What?" said Cedric, looking up. "Dragons," said Harry, speaking quickly, in case Professor Flitwick came out to see where Cedric had got to. "They've got four, one for each of us, and we've got to get past them." Cedric stared at him. Harry saw some of the panic he'd been feeling since Saturday night flickering in Cedric's gray eyes. "Are you sure?" said Cedric in a hushed voice. "Dead sure," said Harry. "I've seen them." "But how did you find out? We're not supposed to know." "Never mind," said Harry quickly. He knew Hagrid would be in trouble if he told the truth. "But I'm not the only one who knows. Fleur and Crumb will know by now. Maxime and Karkaroff both saw the dragons, too." Cedric straightened up, his arms full of inky quills, parchments, and books, his ripped bag dangling off one shoulder. He stared at Harry, and there was a puzzled, almost suspicious look in his eyes. "Why are you telling me?" he asked. Harry looked at him in disbelief. He wasn't sure. He was sure Cedric wouldn't have asked that if he had seen the dragons himself. Harry wouldn't have let his worst enemy face those monsters unprepared. Well, perhaps Malfoy or Snape. It's just fair, isn't it?" he said to Cedric. "We all know now we're all on an even footing, aren't we?" Cedric was looking at him in a slightly suspicious way when Harry heard a familiar clunking noise behind him. He turned around and he saw Mad-Eye Moody emerging from a nearby classroom. "Come with me, Potter," he growled. "Diggory, off you go." Harry stared apprehensively at Moody. Had he overheard them? "Professor, I'm supposed to be in herbology." "Never mind that, Potter. In my office, please." Harry followed him, wondering what was going to happen to him now. What if Moody wanted to know how he'd found out about the dragons? Would Moody go to Dumbledore and tell on Hagrid? Or just turn Harry into a ferret? Well, it might be easier to get past a dragon if he were a ferret, Harry thought dully. He'd be smaller, much less easy to see from a height of 50 feet. He followed Moody into his office. Moody closed the door behind them, and then turned to look at Harry, his magical eye fixed on him as well as the normal one. "That was a very decent thing you just did, Potter," Moody said quietly. Harry didn't know what to say. This wasn't the reaction he had expected at all.
"Keep reading."
"Sit down," said Moody, and Harry sat down, looking around. He had visited this office under two of its previous occupants. In Professor Lockhart's day, the walls had been plastered with beaming, winking pictures of Professor Lockhart himself. When Lupin...
We didn't read that one.
No, we didn't. We missed it.
Well, I think we skipped it.
Yeah, because it was boring. Mm-hmm. When Lupin had lived here, you were more likely to come across a specimen of some fascinating new dark creature he had procured for them to study in class. Now, however, the office was full of a number of exceptionally odd objects that Harry supposed Moody had used in the days when he'd been Auror. Are you listening, by the way?
Yeah.
Okay. Are you hurting me?
Mm-hmm.
On his desk stood what looked like a large cracked glass spinning top. Harry recognized it at once as a sneakoscope because he owned one himself, though it was much smaller than Moody's. In the corner on a small table stood an object that looked something like an extra squiggly golden television aerial.
What's a television aerial?
I think they mean the rabbit ears.
Oh.
It was humming slightly. What appeared to be a mirror hung opposite Harry on the wall, but it was not reflecting the room. Shadowy figures were moving around inside it, none of them clearly in focus. Like my dark detectors, do you? Said Moody, who was watching Harry closely. What's that? Harry asked, pointing to the squiggly golden aerial. Secrecy sensor. Vibrates when it detects concealment and lies. No use here, of course. Too much interference. Students in every direction lying about why they haven't done homework. Been humming ever since I got here. I had to disable my sneakoscope because it wouldn't stop whining. It's extra sensitive. Picks up stuff a mile round. Of course, it could be picking up more than kid stuff. He added in a growl. What's that mirror for? Oh, that's my faux glass. See them out there skulking round? Not really in trouble until I see the whites of their eyes. That's when I open my trunk. He let out a short, harsh laugh and pointed to the large trunk under the keyhole. Under the window. It had seven keyholes in a row. Harry wondered what was in there until Moody's next question brought him back down to earth. So, found out about the dragons, have you? Harry hesitated. He'd been afraid of this, but he hadn't told Cedric. And he certainly wasn't going to tell Moody that Hagrid had broken the rules. It's all right, said Moody, sitting down and stretching his wooden leg with a groan. Cheating's a traditional part of the Triwizard Tournament, and always has been.
It's kind of scary how good this guy is at acting like Moody.
Yeah, I know. I didn't cheat, said Harry sharply. It was sort of an accident that I found out. Dumbledore grinned.
Dumbledore?
I mean, Moody grinned. Sorry. I wasn't accusing you, laddie. I've been telling Dumbledore from the start. He can be as high-minded as he likes, but you can bet old Carcroft and Maxine won't be. They've told their champions everything they can. They want to win. They want to beat Dumbledore. They like to prove he's only human. Moody gave another harsh laugh, and his magical eye swiveled around so fast that it made Harry feel queasy to watch it. So, got any ideas how you can get past your dragon yet? Said Moody. No, said Harry. I'm not going to tell you, said Moody gruffly. I don't show favoritism, me. I'm just going to give you some good general advice. And the first bit is, play to your strengths. I haven't got any, said Harry, before he could stop himself. Excuse me, growled Moody. You've got strengths if I say you've got them. Think now, what were you best at? Harry tried to concentrate. What was he best at? Well, that was easy, really. Quidditch, he said dully, and a fat lot of help. That's right, said Moody, staring very hard, his magical eye barely moving at all. You're a damn flyer, from what I've heard. Yeah, but, Harry stared at him, I'm not allowed a broom, I've only got my wand. My second piece of general advice, said Moody loudly, interrupting him, is to use a nice, simple spell that will enable you to get what you need. He's such an idiot, Harry. Harry looked at him blankly. What did he need?
Oh my God.
Come on, boy, whispered Moody. Put them together. It's not that it's like pulling teeth here.
Can you imagine? Okay, let's just like examine the situation.
Yeah.
This is the bad guy.
I know.
Telling him, being like,
come on.
How the fuck did you escape to Voldemort? Like, you're a fucking retard.
Yeah.
Sorry, I don't say the R word, but that's me.
This is how I feel when talking with some of my students.
I know.
You can only imagine.
It's like you feel like you lead them to
the water.
Right.
And they're like, now what am I supposed to do?
Right, exactly. Drink it, you stupid!
And then it clicked. He was best at flying. He needed to pass the dragon in the air. For that, he needed his firebolt, and for his firebolt, he needed
a summoning spell.
Yeah. Hermione, Harry whispered, where he had sped into the greenhouse 3 minutes later, uttering a hurried apology to Professor Sprout as he passed her. Hermione, I need you to help me. "What do you think I've been trying to do, Harry?" she whispered, her eyes round with anxiety over the top of the quivering flutterby bush she was pruning. "Hermione, I need to learn how to do a summoning charm properly by tomorrow afternoon. You know, he's been practicing for, like, months, right?
Uh-huh.
Why is he going to do it in one afternoon?"
Well, sometimes it's just weird, like, that it seems like the kind of thing, like, maybe even in, like, voice, you know?
Yeah.
Where you practice it, and then, like, one day, it just clicks.
Yeah, I guess it makes some sense. It's possible, but... And so they practiced. They didn't have lunch, but headed for a free classroom, where Harry tried with all his might to make various objects across the room fly towards him. He was still having problems. The books and quills he kept losing heart halfway across the room and dropping like stones. "Concentrate, Harry, concentrate." "What do you think I'm trying to do?" said Harry angrily. "A great big dragon keeps popping in my head for some reason." "Okay, try again." He wanted to skip divination to keep practicing, but Hermione refused point-blank to skive off arithmetic, and there was no point in staying without her. He therefore had to endure over an hour of Professor Trelawney, who spent half the lesson telling everybody that the position of Mars with relation to Saturn, at that moment, meant that people born in July were in great danger of sudden violent deaths. "Well, that's good," said Harry loudly, his temper getting the better of him, "just as long as it's not drawn out. I don't want to suffer." Ron looked for a moment as though he was going to laugh. He certainly caught Harry's eye for the first time in days, but Harry was still feeling too resentful toward Ron to care. He spent the rest of the lesson trying to attract small objects towards him under the table with his wand. He managed to make a fly zoom straight into his hand, but he wasn't sure that was his prowess at summoning charms. Perhaps the fly was just stupid. He forced down some dinner after divination and then returned to the empty classroom with Hermione, using... What?
Hot.
Using the invisibility cloak to avoid the teachers. They kept practicing until midnight. They would have stayed longer, but Peeves turned up and pretended to think that Harry wanted things thrown at him and started chucking chairs across the room. Hermione and Harry left in a hurry before the noise attracted Filch and went back to the Gryffindor common room, which was now mercifully empty. At 2 a.m, Harry stood near the fireplace, surrounded by heaps of objects, books, quills, several upturned chairs, an old set of gobstones, and Neville's toad, Trevor. Only in the last hour had Harry really gotten the hang of the summoning charm.
See? He got it.
Yep. But the thing is, how come he didn't I think it was just that he finally spent time on it.
Yeah, probably.
But why wouldn't you spend time on a charm that allows you to get things that are far away from you?
I know. It would be the best thing.
It would be the best thing
ever. You could clean your room in like 5 minutes.
Exactly. "That's better, Harry. That's loads better," said Hermione, looking exhausted but very pleased. "Well, now we know what to do next time I can't manage a spell," Harry said, throwing a rune dictionary to Hermione so he could try again. "Threaten me with a dragon." "No. Practice." "Right." He raised his wand once more. "Catio dictionary." Oh, it's... how do you pronounce it? Axio?
Axio.
Well, there's two C's.
I know.
Axio. It's probably Axio. Mm-hmm. Oh, but it's Axio.
No.
I'm going to pronounce it Axio.
No, it's Axio.
Why do you think it's Axio?
Because I've heard them say it.
Oh, in the movie. I'm going to go with Axio, because there's two C's, though.
But in Italian, you would say Axio.
But it's supposed to be like Latinate. Should be Accio.
No, it shouldn't.
Fine, Axio.
Okay.
Axio dictionary. The heavy book soared out of Hermione's hand, flew across the room, and Harry caught it. "Harry, I think you've really got it," said Hermione delightedly. "Just as long as it works tomorrow," said Harry. "Firebolt's going to be much farther away than the stuff in here. Why didn't he practice it?" "It's going to be in the castle, and I'm going to be out there on the ground." "That doesn't matter," said Hermione firmly. "Just as long as you're concentrating really, really hard, it'll come. Harry, we'd better get some sleep. You're going to need it." Maybe we should stop there.
Mm-mm.
I think we should stop there, Boo.
Mm-mm. I'll tell you when. I'll tell you when.
Okay. Harry had been focusing so hard on learning the summoning spell that evening that some of his blind panic had left him. It returned in full measure, however, on the following morning. The atmosphere in the school was one of great tension and excitement. Lessons were to stop at midday, giving the students time to get down to the dragon's enclosure, though of course they didn't know what they would find there. Harry felt oddly separate from everyone around him, whether they were wishing him good luck or hissing, "Wolf box of tissues ready, Potter," as he passed. It was a state of nervousness so advanced that he wondered whether he mightn't lose his head when they tried to lead him out to his dragon, and start trying to curse everyone in sight. Time was behaving in a more peculiar fashion than ever before, rushing past in great dollops, so that at one moment he seemed to be sitting down at his first lesson, History of Magic, and the next walking into lunch, and then, where had the morning gone? The last of the dragon-free hours. Professor McGonagall was hurrying over to him in the great hall. Lots of people were watching. Potter, the champions have to get down to the grounds now. You have to get ready for your first task. Okay, said Harry, standing up, his fork falling onto his plate with a clatter. Good luck, Harry, Hermione whispered. You'll be fine. Yeah, said
Harry. And while you're like, good luck, Harry, Hermione whispered.
Well, I don't know. They write that after. Am I supposed to read ahead? Yeah, said Harry in a voice that was most unlike his own. He left the great hall with Professor McGonagall. She didn't seem herself either. In fact, looking nearly as anxious as Hermione, as she walked him down the stone steps, out into the cold November afternoon, she put her hand on his shoulder. Now don't panic, she said. Just keep a cool head. We've got wizards standing by to control the situation if it gets out of hand. The main thing is just to do your best, and nobody will think any the worse of you. You all right? Yes, Harry heard himself say. I'm fine. She was leading him around to the place where the dragons were, around the edge of the forest, when they approached the clump of trees, behind which the enclosure would be clearly visible, Harry saw a tent had been erected, its entrance facing them, screening the dragons from view. You're to go in here with the other champions, said Professor McGonagall in a rather shaky sort of voice, and wait for your turn, Potter. Mr. Bagman is there. He'll be telling you the procedure. Good luck. Thanks, said Harry in a distant, flat voice. She left him at the entrance of the tent. Harry went inside. Fleur Delacour was sitting at a corner on a low wooden stool. She didn't look nearly as composed as usual, but rather pale and clammy. Victor Crumb looked even surlier than usual, which Harry supposed was his way of showing nerves. Cedric was pacing up and down. You know, Victor's a seeker too, right? And he's probably better than Harry. Mm-hmm. So he can probably fly better than Harry. Mm-hmm. Is he going to do that too?
I don't remember.
Cedric was pacing up and down. When Harry entered, Cedric gave him a small smile, which Harry returned, feeling the muscles in his face working rather hard.
What? A small smile?
Smile.
Oh.
What did I say?
Smile.
Oh. Small smile, which Harry returned, feeling the muscles in his face working rather hard, as though they had forgotten how to do it. Harry, good-o, said Bagman happily, looking around at him. Come in, make yourself at home. Bagman was looking like a slightly overblown cartoon figure, standing amid the pale-faced champions. He was wearing his old wasp robes again. Well, now we're all here. It's time to fill you in, said Bagman, brightly. When the audience has assembled, I'm going to be offering you each this bag. He held a small sack of purple silk and shook it at them. From each of you will select a small model of the thing you are about to face. They are different varieties, you see. And I have to tell you something else, too. Yes, your task is to collect the golden egg. Harry glanced around. Cedric, who had nodded once to show that he understood Bagman's word, and started pacing around the tent again. He looked slightly green. Fleur Delacour and Crumb hadn't reacted at all. Perhaps they thought they might be sick if they opened their mouths. That was certainly how Harry felt. But they, at least, had volunteered for this. And in no time at all, hundreds upon hundreds of pairs of feet could be heard passing the tents, their owners talking excitedly, laughing, joking. Harry felt as separate from the crowd as though they were a different species. And then, it seemed like a second later to Harry, Bagman was opening up the neck of the purple silk sack. Should we stop?
Soon, yeah.
Ladies first, he said, offering it to Fleur Delacour. She put a shaking hand inside the bag and drew out a small, perfect model of a dragon, a Welsh green. It had the number 2 around its neck. And Harry knew by the fact that Fleur showed no sign of surprise, but a rather determined resignation, that he had been right. Madame Maxime had told her what was coming. The same held true for Crumb. He pulled out the scarlet Chinese fireball. It had a number 3 on its neck. He didn't even blink, just sat back down and stared at the ground. Well, once they saw
hers. Yeah.
Cedric put his hand into the bag, and out came the bluish-gray Swedish short snout, number 1 tied to its neck. Knowing what was left, Harry put his hand on the silk bag and pulled out the Hungarian horntail, the number 4. It stretched its fangs down as he looked at it, and bared its minuscule fangs. Wait, these things are alive?
Remember, like, the tiny Victor Crumb?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Everything that they have is, like, moves and facts.
The stuff that they can do, they could...
I know.
Yes. Well, there you are, said Bagman. You each have pulled out the dragon you will face. The numbers refer to the order in which you are to take the dragons, you see? Now I'm going to have to leave you in a moment because I'm commentating. Mr. Diggory, you're first. You just go out into the enclosure when you hear a whistle, all right? Now, Harry, could I have a quick word outside? Yes, said Harry blankly. He got up and went out of the tent with Bagman, who walked a short distance away. And, where are we? Into the trees, and turned to him with a fatherly expression on his face. Feeling all right, Harry? Anything I can get you? What? Said Harry. No, nothing. Got a plan, said Bagman, lowering his voice conspiratorially. Because I don't mind sharing a few pointers if you'd like them. Bagman continued, lowering his voice still further. You're the underdog here, Harry. Anything I can do to help? No, said Harry, so quickly he knew it sounded rude. No, I know what I'm going to do, thanks. Nobody would know, Harry, said Bagman, winking at him. No, I'm fine, said Harry, wondering why he kept telling people this, and wondering whether he had ever been less fine. I've got a plan worked out. A whistle blew somewhere. Good Lord, I've got to run, said Bagman in alarm. He hurried off. And we'll stop there. I love you so much, kitty.
Aww. I love you too, puppy.
You're very cute. Okay, sweet poor kitten. If you're listening to this later, I love you so much. You're the cutest girl ever. Sweet dreams.